Hello and welcome to the Bunker Daily. I'm Dorian Linsky. There's only been one story this week, the brutal police response to Black Lives Matter protests across America, triggered by the killing of George Floyd, an unarmed African-American man, by a Minneapolis police officer. Floyd's death, for which police officer Derek Chauvin has now been charged with second-degree murder, opened the floodgates for the most widespread civil unrest since the murder of Martin Luther King in 1968. We've seen armored riot police beating and tear-gassing demonstrators and assaulting journalists in footage that's horrified the world, while President Trump ordered police to drive peaceful protesters away from the White House so that he could pose for a photo opportunity outside a church he doesn't attend with a Bible he doesn't read. What is happening in America, and could it be a turning point? To talk about this, we're delighted to be joined by Marcia Davis, formerly news editor of the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news agency that covers the US criminal justice system. She's also a former editor and writer of the Washington Post. She's from St. Louis, and right now she's in Washington, D.C. Hello, Marcia. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So it's been quite a week. How are you right now?
A mixture of joy and caution, joy and caution, and pain as well. So it's a very interesting time personally, but also with all the excitement and tragedy that's going on in our country and the world. So it's a mixed bag, I'd say.
Well, I mean, as someone who, you know, as a journalist who teaches journalism, is it particularly shocking? I mean, there's many shocking things about this, but were you surprised to see so many reporters being attacked on camera, in some cases on their own cameras, like the CNN correspondent?
Well, yes. It was very disturbing, severely disturbing, because of the First Amendment here in our Constitution. And so to see so many journalists under fire, it was shocking, at once shocking, but also a righteous indignation sprang up in me to see that. And the idea that journalists would come under fire was truly, truly disturbing and offensive. And as I said, for me, there is an indignant kind of response that kind of situation would happen in our country. It was really unprecedented and quite disturbing.
It's been, I mean, almost 6 years now since the killing of Michael Brown and the protests in Ferguson, Missouri, the birth of Black Lives Matter. Now, in that time, many more Black people have been killed by the police. Why has George Floyd's death been so explosive? Why has it triggered these protests in a way that earlier cases didn't?
That's a really profound question. And I think that for us in this country, it's as if this is a new moment in the history of our country. The idea that someone would be literally have their life taken on camera in such, well, there's no way to say that there was something good about someone losing their life, but to have it so violently exposed has been a huge galvanizing force for this country. And one of the biggest things is not only that the video existed, but that it galvanized so many people of all races. And it's not only that it's happened here in the United States, but all over the world. And that has been a remarkable development.
Well, I mean, I know from the past that the media does tend to give violence by protesters more coverage than violence by police. But social media has been full of clips of police brutality from cities across America. You mentioned, obviously, the recording of George Floyd's death, which you know, caused action to be taken. Do you think camera phones have changed the narrative of events like this, including the narrative of the protest, for the better, so that it can't just be presented as protesters getting out of hand and the police trying to control them?
Absolutely. The way that, telephones and the recordings have changed history, really. And there was talk that there would be this revolution in technology when phones came out, but the idea that they would be this kind of revolution is just significant, and that it is such a immediate response that, you know, you can record right there and it's there for history. As we've seen all over the world, a tool by which people can mobilize.
And going back to the you know, to George Floyd, does the Minneapolis Police Department have a particularly bad reputation, or is this, or is it actually quite representative of many police departments?
Well, that's an interesting question. First of all, we know that Minneapolis has not been a great example of good policing. There was Philando Castile, who was murdered. There was Jabal Clark, who was murdered. It's got a very bad reputation, I think is the correct way and the best way to say that. What it means in terms of just the country, I think it's one of the worst ones in terms of people of color and African-American men and women making their way in Minneapolis. But in terms of how it represents other police departments, I think that right now, Minneapolis has had just a 10-year history of just great negative response. And there's all kinds of reasons for that. In terms of being able to live and to live in peace, it is a remarkably difficult time for African Americans and other people of color in Minneapolis.
Well, obviously, the goal of protests is to change things. You were involved in covering Ferguson in 2014. Under a different president, of course. Did much change to improve policing after that, even temporarily? Did all that kind of attention on it actually have any positive effects and reforms?
Well, again, I think the bottom line is that the answer is somewhat, and then not much has changed. So there's been some change. Ferguson just elected its first African-American and first woman as mayor. And so that has been a long time coming. And that department, police department, is under the federal government's watch act in terms of just having to meet certain standards of reliability. So it is under reform. So that's a important development. It's the political development is important. So that's a big thing, I think. How it will turn out, you know, history will have to, we will have to see in terms of how things will go. But her election is a significant point.
These latest protests have already caused the charges against the Minneapolis police officers to be escalated. Several city authorities, including Minneapolis, have sort of distanced themselves from the police in various ways. How do you gauge the success of a movement like this, of a protest like this, in the sort of short and the long term?
Well, I think that there are several things. In the immediate, the very fact that people have galvanized is a very significant thing that can't be minimized. The fact that people, all kinds of people, have come to these demonstrations is very important. And it's not just folks who are marching, but people in their living rooms are responding as well. So that in itself is an important point. And the fact that people are really, it seems to be, committed to some kind of change happening in a meaningful way. And that's not to say that some police departments have not made some changes, but there's a call now for action that will and I guess this gets into the long term, actions about how to make standing changes, including on the federal level, that would make a difference in terms of the quality of life in general, and that all people, regardless of their background, should be treated in a certain kind of way, a certain level of respect and decency. That would be a permanent change that would be quite significant.
Because, of course, one of the, you know, one of the goals, one of the themes of these protests is it's not just the very obvious violence of the police, but also, you know, sort of racism in America in general. And that, of course, is that's a big conversation. That's a long term process. Do you think that it kind of sometimes it takes these quite extreme, you know, footage of these quite extreme events to get your average American thinking about all, I say average white American, thinking about all kinds of forms of racism that aren't necessarily so obviously brutal?
You know, that's too is a very interesting question. And I think that we can't forget that the world is caught in this COVID trap. Up until, 9 days ago, that was, and it still remains, this critical clutch that everyone is involved in. As we know, the United States is not in the best position in terms of just the quality of life and, frankly, the quality of death. 107,000 people have died. So that in itself is a big deal, of course. But then to have this other element, this racial unrest, I think is, you know, this incredible vice that we are in. And I'm hoping, just as a journalist, that something good will come out of it. It's a difficult time for the world, but it's also, I think, a time full of possibilities. When you talk about long-term change, I think both COVID-19 and the potential for change with Mr. Floyd's unfortunate death is that there is talk of, you know, looking at the systematic issues that have caught our country, whether you're talking about systematic racism in terms of policing, but also systematic racism in terms of the healthcare system, for example, in terms of education, in terms of all kinds of the social dynamics that have kept our country so far behind. There's a lot of talk about change. The question is, will that happen?
Well, I mean, thinking of political change here, racism and police brutality, obviously, you know, around for many decades before Trump. He's sort of the symptom, not the cause. But he seems to be the worst possible president at this moment. Do you think that these, I mean, we said, you know, obviously protests happened in Ferguson. There have been Black Lives Matter protests under Obama. But do you think it would have happened on such a large scale under Obama, or if Hillary Clinton were president? Do you think that Trump's presence is part of the kind of tinder that sort of lit this fire and brought people out in such huge numbers?
I'm not really sure about that. I think that video of Mr. Floyd's death is an extraordinarily profound and sad commentary on the state of African-American men and women who have died at the hands of police violence. So I'm not sure that it would not have galvanized people in the way that it has. I think in a lot of ways, this moment would be an exceptional moment no matter who was in charge. Now, the question of how another administration would have responded, I think would be qualitatively different. But I think that this moment in itself is extraordinary, independent of who is in charge.
Do you think that this will shape the presidential election?
We'll see, won't we? That's the question that is on so many people's minds, is what will happen. I don't count President Donald Trump out. This race is not over, but in his imagination, and in his, I should say, his reality, it is not over. We don't know. I don't think that people can take anything for granted in terms of how the elections will turn out. But certainly people are lining up on both sides, and you know, we'll see how it goes.
What did you make of Joe Biden's statement? He's someone who effectively won the Democratic primaries with the support of a lot of older Black voters. Do you think, from what he said, does he get this? Is he saying enough?
There are people who, especially amongst young African Americans, who say he's better than Donald Trump, but they want more, that there is kind of an impatience with politicians in general, frankly. But in terms of Joe Biden, for young people, I think that there is a great deal of anxiousness about where he is in terms of being able to truly deliver what people want. At the same time, I think that there is, you know, the reality that he is, for them, way better than the current president. So again, we will see how this all shakes out. But I think that that Mr. Biden has a shot at this election. And I also should say, of course, that one thing that no one can deny, well, people do deny it, but the truth is that he has known what loss looks like and what it feels like, and has been able to speak to the country, frankly, in terms that people need. They need empathy. They need leadership to recognize a loss. And that's whether you're talking about COVID-19 or the loss of Mr. Floyd. And I should say, even in this period, in this month and a half, it's not just Mr. Floyd's death. It's Ahmaud Arbery, who was chased down by men in a truck and shot and killed. Breonna Taylor, a young woman, a ambulance worker who was killed in her sleep when police executed a no-knock warrant, meaning that they were able to go into the home without announcing who they were. And they were able to shoot and kill her in her sleep. So there is this storm that has happened in our country in a way that feels different. It feels different, both in terms of the level of tragedy, but also in terms of the level of possibility.
And finally, we're a British podcast, and lots of people here are sort of, you know, following this story, have good intentions, don't necessarily know how best to show solidarity beyond, you know, this hashtag, or, you know, the black square on Instagram or whatever, which is a gesture, but not necessarily achieving much. How would you suggest that people can help in a meaningful way? What's the best thing that people can do that will really make a difference?
My ability to speak on behalf of anyone is limited by the fact that I am one person.
Sure.
And I can't say what they can do, nor is it my place. However, as a human being, I think that the whole idea of being able to keep being involved, and if it's meaning demonstrating, then demonstrate. If it means speaking up in your offices, and, you know, a discussion comes up around the issue of race, then taking a stand that is principled, that this is no longer what can be tolerated. And I have to say that it's not just in the United States. It's all over the world, the question of race and how people are judged by their skin as opposed to the quality of their character. It's got to be more than hashtags, I think, in a general way. But even the hashtag is better than nothing. But the question is, how much do they stand up and how much do they participate? But I really think that this is a moment of inflection, that people all over the world are ready to put an end to this madness of racism. And, you know, however they decide, there's got to be a way to speak up and to speak out.
That's great. Thank you so much. Marcia Davis, thanks for joining us on the Bunker Daily. Take care.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. We'll be back on Monday with another Bunker Daily. Stay safe. See you soon.
The Bunker Daily was presented by Dorian Linsky. The producer was Andrew Harrison. The assistant producer was Jacob Archbold. And audio production was by me, Alex Rees. Theme tune by Kenny Dickinson. The Bunker Daily is a Podmasters production.